Welcome to Feeling It, a podcast where we discuss TV, movies, pop culture, and whether or not we are feeling it. If this is your first time joining us, welcome to the show.
And here we go.
Come on, walk and talk.
All right, here we go.
You guys want to hear something neat?
It's showtime.
Hold your ears, folks.
Here we go.
See what you can do now.
Take your position.
All right, ladies, buckle up.
Let's do this.
Hold on to your butts.
Seriously?
Listen to me very, very carefully.
Hey, it's me again.
Eat him up.
Enjoy.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to Feeling It. Each week on this show, we like to share what pieces of pop culture we're really feeling this week. Whatever show, movie, song, or tech, we just can't get out of our heads. In addition to those picks, this week we'll be discussing Greta Gerwig's new film, Barbie. But before we get started with all of that, let's introduce ourselves. And when we do, let's answer the question, what kind of Barbie or Ken are you?
I'm Lucas Stripe from Chicago, and I am definitely physicist Barbie because she doesn't get a lot of screen time, but she is very serious, but also very fun.
Okay, Lucas, you took that question in a direction I did not expect.
What is the what direction did you expect this to go?
Let me give you an example. I'm Sandra Amstutz, and I would say I'm sweet treat Barbie because I like to provide sweet treats for my friends.
What is sweet treat? Is that a real thing?
No, you're like
you're making
like,
up.
Yes, it's like if you were a Barbie, like what kind of Barbie would you be? If you were a Ken, like
I think you meant like a specific
like
kind of Barbie.
Podcaster Barbie.
Got
you know,
it.
Like,
got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Chicago okay. Ken. What would you be? Like, what would you want to be boiled down to?
I get it. Okay, let me start over.
Okay.
I'm Lucas Stripe from Chicago, and I would be Cocktail Barbie. I am the life of the party, but spend most of my time in the kitchen making cocktails and not fraternizing with the rest of the party.
I love that. Do you want me to do my intro over, or do
nope,
you want me to
Nope, we are going
to
just keep right on rolling. I love
Great.
It.
Well, I love hearing that. And then we are so excited this week to have a third person on the podcast. Alyssa, please introduce yourself.
Hello, everybody. My name is Alyssa Weaver. I'm a physician assistant living in the Bay Area in California and a self-proclaimed TV and movie lover and dedicated Feeling It listener. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. We're so excited to have you. What kind of Barbie or Ken are you?
Well, to be honest, I interpreted it the same way that Lucas did. So yes. I would have said Dr. Barbie, but I am a PA, which is different than a doctor. If I had to create my own Barbie, I would say I would be Adventure Barbie. I like hiking. I like being outdoors. I love traveling and trying new things. So that would be me.
Love it. Love it so much.
I will say... I would also call you Dr. Barbie because every time I break something or pull something, you're the person I call.
Happy to be a supportive.
It's so valuable to have a friend in the medical industry that you can call and be like, am I panicking about this? Do I need to see a doctor about this? You know, just like to calm me down.
It is very true.
Okay, well... I'm so happy to know what types of Barbies y'all are. We're going to talk about Barbie a lot this episode.
A whole lot.
But before we do, I want to know, Lucas, what are you feeling this week?
I am feeling G.I. Jane, which is a 1997 movie that I would assume most people have not watched. I'll tell this story first. I got Paramount Plus to rewatch all of the Mission Impossible movies. And I told myself, you get a 1 week free trial. And I was like, I'm going to cancel it before that week is up. And just like they want you to do, I absolutely forgot to cancel it immediately. And so now I have a month of Paramount Plus that I'm trying to get through. And so I was looking through, what movies do they have? And they had G.I. Jane. And I watched it, and it might be just because of the expectation that I had for it, which is that it's a bad movie. But it was actually really, really good. Demi Moore plays the first woman to undergo special operations training to become a U.S. Navy SEAL. This is obviously a fictional story because there are no female U.S. Navy SEALs. But it goes into detail basically about what the training process is like, but also kind of what... that grueling experience is like to be someone kind of on the outside who kind of has everyone against you. But then also the political machinations of senators, Navy commanders, all of that in trying to get her to fail, but also who's trying to help push her through, who's trying to give her, basically gender norming obstacles of trying to give, 30-second head starts and stuff like that. And but also just trying to gain the respect of the people around you. And so it's this interesting look at femininity, and also the way that people kind of discard femininity to try to blend in, or embrace femininity to blend in other areas. And it's a, yeah. It's an interesting way of code switching that I haven't seen from white women before. <Yeah. laughs> So I really enjoyed the movie. Also, Viggo Mortensen plays a training officer who has the wildest accent I've ever heard, but gives an amazing performance in this movie. I really, really enjoyed it. And I don't know if I could recommend it to everybody, but I will say that I kind of love this movie.
So basically what you're saying is it's the opposite of Barbie.
It's kind of the opposite of Barbie, yeah.
Interesting, because I was thinking it had some similar... The way you describe it, it seems like it has similar themes.
It has similar themes, but I think it pushes them in very different directions than Barbie,
sure.
Which we can get into in Barbie.
Would you recommend it as a double feature with Barbie?
I don't think it would be a good double feature with Barbie. Okay. It would be an interesting double feature with Barbie, but I don't think it would be as enjoyable.
Good to know. You know, I don't think I'd ever heard of this movie before.
You never heard of it?
I mean, I've heard of the phrase G.I. Jane.
Yeah.
But I don't know that, like, I had conceived it as a movie.
It's a Ridley Scott movie. I think Demi Moore won a Razzie, I think, for her performance. Like, at the time, it was viewed as, like, a very bad movie. It's not. Demi Moore is amazing in it. I think she's incredible. I think Ridley Scott is a great filmmaker, and he hasn't missed in everything that I've watched of his. So, and this included.
Very amazing. Nice. Alrighty. Well, good thing for all those people who have Paramount Plus that are looking yeah. for things to watch.
Yeah.
Alyssa, what are you feeling this week?
This week, I am feeling a show called What We Do in the Shadows. Season 5
yes.
is coming out on Hulu. Are you guys familiar with this show?
Very familiar. I absolutely love this show.
Yeah, I'm aware of it, but have never seen it.
Yeah, it's a documentary-style look into kind of the daily lives of vampires living in modern-day Staten Island. So kind of like mockumentary style, like The Office, like lots of breaking of the fourth wall. And it's absolutely hilarious. It's the TV kind of version of the movie that was, I think it came out in probably the early 2010s. The movie was produced and written by Taika Waititi. And then they made a show based off of it. And it's absolutely hysterical. Laugh out loud funny. The episodes are 30 minutes each. And yeah, it's showing on FX, but then we watch it on Hulu when it comes out every week. So it's entering season 5 right now. We just got through the first 2 episodes last night, and I am all in.
We have not started season 5 yet, but we love this show. This is a great, what we call downstairs show, which is basically like when you just want to relax, something you'd watch in bed, of just like very funny, always consistently good. It's an amazing show.
Yeah, I haven't watch this one yet. I believe everyone and their like positive critiques.
Yes.
The problem is I have a grudge against the source material. I really did not like the original movie. And so it's always just been so hard for me to commit to a TV yeah. show version of that.
Yeah, it's basically just a prolonged version of the movie itself. So if it's
sure.
not up your alley, I guess you can try sure. a different vampire-themed show.
Agreed. I think the first couple seasons stick pretty close to a lot of the content of the movie. I think as it gets farther out, it goes in very different directions.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if that style of humor, if that style of, you know, if that energy isn't what you're into, then
sure.
Yeah, you're not going to like it.
Yeah, maybe one day I'll give it a second chance. We'll see.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that, Alyssa. So, what I'm feeling this week is a podcast that I listen to religiously. I have, I would say maybe like 6 podcasts where I listen to every episode that comes out every week. And one of them is called The Deep Dive. It's hosted by June Diane Raphael and Jessica St. Clair. They are comedians, best friends, actresses, their show description describes it as, says, "The Deep Dive captures the friendship of two women trying to survive adult womanhood." They have some episodes where they just talk to each other about motherhood, their lives, the beauty products they're trying, the movies that they love, you know, just general conversation. And then they have other episodes where they bring on experts. And these experts are of a wide range of fields. It can be anyone from someone who's an expert in Christmas decoration to someone who is an expert in how women should be running for office, for political office. And it is really the highlight of my week whenever I get to check in with these two ladies. I've been fans of them separately in their careers as actresses and comedians. And this podcast is a way for me to listen to women that are a little bit older than me and in a little different place in their lives. They're both wives, mothers, they're, you know, further along in their careers. And it's just a way for me to kind of envision what a different version of my adult life could look like and maybe kind of prep myself for the possibility of the things they are experiencing or the things that we are currently both experiencing when they talk about grief and loss or beauty trends or home decor, things that I am, you know, experiencing right now that I highly relate to. I just love their friendship so much, and their podcast is funny and emotional and educational. I adore it. Are you guys familiar with those actresses at all?
I am. I have never heard that they were doing a podcast together. Are the episodes organized around like specific like topics, or is it more of just like a chat show episode kind of a thing?
Yeah, so it varies. So some the episodes where it's just the two of them are very chat show like, and it'll say in the description, like, what are the main topics that they hit? But it kind of is like just whatever the conversation takes them. They don't really like pick a topic to discuss that day.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, there's a lot of episodes with experts. So if you scroll through their episode list, you'll see, you know, who the guest is, if there is a guest in the title of the episode. And sometimes it's people with names that you'll recognize, like other actresses like Casey Wilson, or actresses that have been on, you know, shows that they've been on. Most of the time it is women. The podcast is primarily about like womanhood, but not all the time. You know, sometimes there's, you know, they have many a gay male friend that will come on the podcast. And it's just delightful. Again, like they talk about things like grief, but it is from the perspective of two incredibly funny women. And so you get to feel enriched while also I never tune in and think like, oh, here's my homework for the week, you know, is listening to this podcast.
You know, you've sold me. I'm in. That sounds like it's right up my alley, and I'm going to save it on my Spotify account right after this.
Oh, I'm so glad. It's the podcast that I find myself recommending to a lot of my female friends, like especially the ones that are new mothers or who are interested in motherhood. It's not all about motherhood, but it's definitely discussed. And I just feel like it's the kind of thing where it's like listening. It's like a girl's night in a podcast episode.
Fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I felt like, especially this week with Barbie, it felt very relevant to lot of our conversation today.
Yeah.
And with that, I ask you both, are you ready to talk about Barbie?
So ready.
100%.
First thing I want to ask both of you is, I have a two-part question for each of you. What was your relationship to Greta Gerwig as a filmmaker? And what is your relationship to Barbie as a toy slash concept?
As a concept. I'll say I love Greta Gerwig. I love all of her acting roles. And when she transitioned to more screenwriting and directing, I have been extremely excited to watch that happen. But also, all of her movies, or I guess her previous two, since she's only directed two movies, or I guess this is her third. Let me back up. Her previous two movies both ended up on my like end of the year top movies, my favorite movies of the year. And so I was highly anticipating whatever she did next. And I feel like knowing that she was going to do Barbie made me anxious, one, because it is a big franchise property, but two, it's Barbie, which doesn't feel like it really aligns with anything that she's made in the past. But Barbie as a concept, I have absolutely no experience with. As someone who did not grow up with like sisters or even like female cousins or anything like that. Like I wasn't around anyone who had a Barbie. So I knew that it was a thing. But I didn't know there was even more than one type of Barbie until like this movie.
Wow.
So all of the content here is new to me.
That's really fascinating that you were so out of the loop.
It's completely out of the loop.
Alyssa, what about you?
I also am a huge Greta Gerwig fan. Loved her in her acting roles previously. And then obviously as a screenwriter and director, Lady Bird and Little Women are phenomenal and up there in my favorite movies for the year. So I agree with Lucas on that. So when I heard that she was directing the Barbie movie, I was super excited and honestly couldn't think of a director that I would rather see kind of try to tackle that work, because I knew it would be thoughtful and engaging and still really, really fun and super well written. And then for my relationship with Barbie, I was the opposite of Lucas. I grew up with so many Barbies, like boxes of Barbies. Specifically, me and my sister had an affinity for Disney-themed Barbies. So we had Ariel and Belle and just all of the Disney Barbies. I remember my first Barbie was a school teacher Barbie. And if you pressed a button on her back, she would say things like, "Math is fun." So that was my very first one. And then I grew up with a twin brother, and I remember that when I got my first Barbie, I can't remember all the details, but he may have been jealous or he may have also just wanted to play along. So when I got Barbie, he got a Ken doll, and he got specifically the cowboy Ken doll. Wow. So I have very early memories of growing up with Barbie, and it was very much a part of my life when I was a kid.
Oh, and so... Did your relationship to Barbie change as you grew up? Like, is it something that you soured on, or that you still just like were fond of?
I think it has changed over time, especially getting older and being a teenager as a girl and being self-conscious, like as you grow up about your body, not looking like Barbie's body, and definitely became more aware of that side of things and kind of the stereotypes that are associated with Barbie. And so I think over the years, I mean, obviously, I haven't played with Barbies my whole life. It was my childhood. But
sure.
I guess I haven't really paid Barbie a lot of thought after that. Like, after that realization that it was kind of this unattainable goal to look up to Barbie like that, I just haven't really thought much about her. And then suddenly this movie comes out, and it's all over the internet, and you can't escape Barbie anymore. So
sure.
I think the relationship with Barbie is evolving over time.
Absolutely. Well, for myself, similar to you, Lucas, I am a huge fan of Greta Gerwig. Her first two movies, I think, are incredible pieces of work, especially Little Women. Little Women was my favorite movie the year it came out. And Little Women kind of took me by surprise. I was looking forward to it, but then when I saw it, I was blown over by like what a masterpiece I think that film was.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And so... I was highly anticipating this movie. Those who have listened to our top 10 episode for 2022 will know that Barbie was my most anticipated movie of 2023. Like you mentioned, Alyssa, when I found out that Greta Gerwig was the one tackling Barbie, I felt like at least it'll be interesting. At mm-hmm. least it will have a good script. You know, like I can't say what the rest of it will be like, but... I trust Greta Gerwig as a writer first and foremost.
Totally.
And so I was, so excited for this movie. When it comes to Barbie itself, I'm sure I did have a Barbie or play with Barbies, but I don't have like a specific one that I remember. But what I did have was a collection of Barbie Christmas ornaments. Christmas ornaments are a big thing in my family. Every single year, my grandmother buys every person in our family a Hallmark Christmas ornament from whatever series we're collecting. And so when I was a child, I collected the Barbie series of Hallmark ornaments. And each year I would get a brand new Barbie ornament. And I remember being a child and having my Barbie ornaments hanging on the Christmas tree, and I would take them off of the Christmas tree and play with them as if they were Barbie toys, you know? And those Christmas ornaments, I still have them. They're just so beautiful. And I think because of them, to me, Barbie was, I did play with them, but Barbie was less of a toy that I played with and more is just like an object of beauty and glamour. Mm. On the Christmas ornaments, the clothes don't come on and off. They're all, it's one big piece, you know? And so the dresses were these beautiful ball gowns with glitter and they were huge. And I also had the iconic striped Barbie swimsuit as a Christmas ornament. And Barbie with the first stole. And the glamour of them is what Barbie was to me. Barbie was a beautiful thing that you looked at, not necessarily like a person I wanted to be. Mm. You know, when I asked you, Alyssa, about like how did your relationship with Barbie is like maybe the concept like evolve over time. Similarly, like as I got older, I didn't think much about Barbie, but looking back on this weekend and how like everything about the Barbie marketing campaign is all about like femininity and the color pink, I do remember being a teenager and like femininity not being cool. Like I wouldn't be caught dead wearing pink as in high school. It was like, pink was very much not cool. Pink was for kids. I was like a teen or an adult. And it wasn't until maybe after college, did I start embracing the color pink again. And that's just something I've just started to think about and realize in the midst of all of this mania.
That's so interesting. And it's, I don't know if you experienced this, Sandra, but with all of the Barbie mania that's going on right now and just like being excited about the movie and going to see the movie, there's something that felt like really familiar about everything that was going on. Like I wasn't surprised that they dressed Margot Robbie up in all these outfits that were Barbie-esque for the marketing campaign. And I wasn't surprised by the posters because I'm like, oh, it looks like the toys that I used to have growing up. Like it was all just so nostalgic. But then also, interesting to think about how our relationship with Barbie has changed over time.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that is how people felt about comic book movies like 2000, like the late 2008, 2010, like that era when people started actually like really leaning into comic book movies? Do you feel like people who were like really into comics were like, yes, this is the feeling?
Probably.
You know what it really reminded me of is, you know, there are some people, I'm thinking more specifically about everyone dressing in pink for this movie, you know, and how that's become its own thing. It's like not just people being excited about the Barbie movie, but everyone's dressing up to go see it. There are some people that dress up as superheroes to go see Spider-Man or whatever it is, right? But what it really reminded me of is like midnight showings of Harry Potter movies.
Agreed. I was about to say that. You took the words out of my mouth.
Just like how the childlike excitement of, I'm so excited for this piece of property that I'm going to go see the first showing possible, and it's not going to be weird to go to the theater in a costume.
Yeah.
You're not going to look like the weirdo that, like, is dressed as Spider-Man at, like, the 2 p.m. Saturday showing of Spider-Man, you know?
Yeah.
It just felt so, like the excitement was so normalized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
That does bring me to what I want to say about the weekend as a whole, which I am considering this part one of our Barbenheimer episode series. We'll talk about Barbie in this episode, and then we'll talk about Oppenheimer in a future episode. But I do want to ask you all also, what was your experience just participating in Barbenheimer weekend? Did you see both movies? Did you see them at the same time or the same day? I mean, what was your experience like at the theater? I'm so curious.
It was so difficult to try and book both screenings on the same day. I'm shocked that theaters didn't coordinate that better. I don't know if you had the same experience, but I wanted to watch them on the same day and just had trouble finding times that actually made sense because of all of the overlapping screenings. So I was able to do it. So last Friday I did see Oppenheimer at 10:45 a.m. and then Barbie at 2 o'clock because Oppenheimer is 3 hours long. So
I'm impressed.
Basically bought a bucket of popcorn for lunch and then went straight into Barbie. So
Lucas, what was your theater experience like? Were you seeing people in costumes for either or both? Were your theaters packed?
theaters were packed, absolutely. Nobody was in costume for Oppenheimer, but people were wearing Barbie stuff to the Oppenheimer screening in a way that made it seem like they were about to go to a Barbie screening right after. So it was a whole deal for sure.
Were you wearing anything themed for either?
I was not.
Scrooge Lucas.
I know, right? I don't have anything pink. And I didn't really think about it. I was like, it's 10 a.m. No one's going to be dressing up. And I got there and everyone's dressing up. I also didn't think anybody would be at the theater. I didn't think there would be a Friday 10 a.m. screening that was completely full. And it was.
Yeah. So. Alyssa, how was your experience?
Well, I sadly did not have time to see both movies over the weekend. I only saw Barbie. I am planning to see Oppenheimer hopefully sometime this week. But I still felt like even though I only saw the Barbie movie, I still participated in the weekend and could engage in the conversations around both movies. I mean, I've seen all of the trailers for Oppenheimer and all of the mashup trailers between Oppenheimer and Barbie. And, I've seen some interviews with the cast of Oppenheimer, so I'm definitely excited for it. But it wasn't quite the same as Lucas's experience. I think the thing I've enjoyed most about Barbenheimer weekend has been all of the memes that have resulted from it. Like one of my favorite ones is the one, I don't know if you guys saw it, of Cillian Murphy in kind of in an outfit that Ken would wear as if he was part of the Barbie marketing slew of things that came out. There's just so many great memes that resulted from the weekend. So it'll be fun to complete the experience in the next couple of days.
The internet has just been my favorite place when it, as far as it relates to Barbenheimer. Yeah. Alyssa, what was your theater like?
My theater was all pink. I did not wear pink. I didn't even think about it going into the theater, which was kind of silly, but lots of people wearing pink, lots of people wearing Barbie branded merchandise. I saw even the person sitting next to me, they had like a bucket of popcorn and then there were pink M&Ms scattered throughout it. Like they were doing some sort of a special food related thing to celebrate the Barbie weekend.
Amazing. I decided a lot of people were trying to see them both in one day. I did not think that I could emotionally handle both films in one day.
Yeah.
So I decided to do a Barbenheimer sandwich, which was I saw Barbie on Friday night. I saw Oppenheimer on Saturday night, and I saw Barbie again on Sunday morning.
Smart.
Wow.
It was honestly, I would say, one of the best ways to experience both films. Another way that I would like to try, I saw someone on Twitter say, you know, and this is spoiling a line from the Barbie trailer, but the best way to watch both of these films is to start Barbie, and then as soon as she says, do you guys ever think about dying? Leave the Barbie theater, go watch Oppenheimer, and then come back and then watch the rest of Barbie.
That's so good.
So maybe someday at the end of this year when these are out on VOD, I will attempt that cycle. But I loved my viewing experience. I was in packed theaters for all three showings. I personally wore a hot pink dress, and then I also was wearing pink Birkenstocks, which, for those of you who have seen the movie, know how special that was to me. I had a great time. Everyone was dressed in pink in my theater. At my Oppenheimer showing, I saw two different couples. There were these two girls. One was in a black leather coat and the other was in a hot pink dress. So they had paired up their costumes. And then I saw another couple, a man and a woman. And the man was in all black. The woman was in all pink. I loved that the most, you know, seeing people dressing in tandem.
Very fun.
Yeah. So obviously much more pink than anything. As soon as I was coming into the theater, there was a couple both wearing pink, a guy in a pink polo. And there were other guys, you know, being like, did she make you wear that? He's like, no, all my own, you know.
I have to say, even though I didn't wear pink to the theater, I am wearing pink today in honor of the podcast recording.
Yes.
Perfect. This whole weekend has been... it's just been so joyous. It's been exciting to see people excited to go to the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
To go to the movie theater and there be packed showings and every screening has been so fun. It makes me happy, and it also makes me wish just that, like, every film or most film experiences were similar to this, you know, mm-hmm. that we had exciting original movies out, you know, more than just once a summer. And so, yeah, I hope that maybe Hollywood takes a lesson from, like, just both both from how much money these movies have made and also just the general enthusiasm this weekend has brought about us.
Yeah, I think the lesson should be make good original films that can, you know, that people can get excited about. But the lesson I feel like they're going to take away is pick two movies to start marketing together. And that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I am ready to talk about our feelings on the film itself.
Let's do it.
So, Lucas, what did you think of the film Barbie?
Barbie is a terrible movie. I did not like it at all. No, I'm just kidding. It's fantastic. I love it.
I was about to kick you off the screen.
Yeah, they said feminist too many times. The patriarchy came up a lot in a way that I didn't like. Yeah. This movie is really, really great. This is going to sound like an insult, but I felt like it. I really compared it to Deadpool, which is an entirely different movie.
But so just
the meta-ness of it, and like the reveling in like the corporate machinations of this movie is something that I think the Deadpool movies did a lot. I don't know. I did not love that as much in the Deadpool movies, but it just reminded me of them when I was watching it. And just the way that it references Mattel and how much that's a part of it, as well as referencing the kind of lore and history and commercialism of Barbie. I think that one of the interesting things about this movie is the production design, the relationship between kind of the real world and Barbie Land, the kind of cheery, toyistic is not a word, but that's the word I'm going to use.
Yeah, I love
nature
it.
Of all of the props and all of mm-hmm. the kind of the dressing here was it felt very Barbie, but also felt wholly original to mm-hmm. a movie in a way that I just like every time when we were in Barbie Land, I constantly was looking at trying to get everything on the screen. I'm excited to see it again for that reason of just to continually look at absolutely everything that's there. Mm-hmm. But overall, I really like this movie. I know I have some qualms with it that mostly I think we'll have to talk about in spoilers, but we can get into that later. But yeah, Barbie's a good movie. You should see it.
Yep.
Alyssa, I'd love to hear what you think of the movie.
Well, I am a fan. I mean, like we talked about earlier, as soon as I knew Greta Gerwig was involved, it was going to be on my list of favorite movies of the year. And I think it's right up there, even though we're halfway through the year right now. I thought it was just delightful and charming and witty and self-aware and bombastic and refreshing. And overall, I just wanted more time in Barbie Land. Like, we were there and I was seeing all of it, trying to take it all in. And I just wanted more and more of it. Like, if the movie was an hour longer and it was just in Barbie Land, I would have been all in and just not even looking at the time, because it was just so well done. I mean, the production design and the costumes were incredible. And I think the production designer, Sarah Greenwood, along with Katie Spencer, Sarah Greenwood has done other films that I've loved before, Pride and Prejudice and Anna Karenina and Atonement. And then same thing with the costume designer, Jacqueline Duran. She was also in Pride and Prejudice and Little Women. And just it was a powerhouse of, I think, female innovation and design, and it was just so well done.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna second everything that the two of y'all have said. The biggest thing that I love this theater thinking is that Greta Gerwig is 3 for 3. Has knocked it out of the park 3 times in a row. I think, like I said earlier, I think Little Women is a masterpiece, and the one thing in coming into Barbie, I was like, Little Women is kind of a hard film to follow. Because I think she wrote a beautiful adaptation of it. But of course, the source material is so good, right? That like she had so much great stuff to work with. And I do think she made another masterpiece. I love this movie so much. Similarly to Little Women, the first time I watched it, I cried during a few key, really sad or emotional parts. And then the second time I watched it, I cried through the whole movie. I did not go into Barbie expecting to be as emotional as I was. I expected to just have a lot of fun, which I did. One of my biggest compliments of this movie is that it's just so much fun. But I found it to be incredibly deep. It actually did this really great magic trick of being incredibly deep and emotional while also, like, you also got to, throughout the plot, be like, they are toys. You know, this is fun. This is play. The way that she was able to balance the two of those is remarkable to me. I found, like you said, Alyssa, the production design is just, like, it's so sumptuous. The way that she is clearly not afraid of color is so refreshing. When we talked about West Side Story, the Steven Spielberg remake that happened recently, I was blown away by, like, his use of color in the film and how modern day cinema does not embrace color in, like, a full passionate way. And that was one thing with Barbie that I was so taken by. I just, like you said, I wanted to live in Barbie land. I wanted to stay in Barbie land constantly. I want to watch this movie again and pause every scene so that I can look at all the production details that are in every single background moment in Barbie. And then I just would say, before we get to spoilers, that Greta Gerwig has made three films so far that to me are all about what it is like to move from childhood to womanhood. And I didn't expect that coming into Barbie. I kind of just thought that there would be a lot of thoughtful critiques about Barbie as a concept and feminism, but I didn't expect it to tackle the idea of, like, what it means to grow up and become an adult. She never fails to, like, bring that into her work, to bring motherhood and daughterhood into her work. And those are things that I will forever be fascinated by. And so I will probably forever love Greta Gerwig's work as she continues on to this, on this subject matter. Like I said, we'll talk more in spoilers, but I was incredibly moved. And I would also just say that all of the performances are killer top notch. I think Margot Robbie is one of our generation's best actresses, and Ryan Gosling continues to just, like, wow and amaze me.
I mean, I would be remiss to say if Ryan Gosling wasn't the best part of this movie. Oh my goodness. He just, every time he was on the screen, my eyes just went towards him and I just couldn't stop watching him. He just embraced it so much on screen. And then I don't know how much you guys watched the interviews and kind of the press leading up to the tour, but he just went all in on embracing Ken and being Ken, and he knows Ken so better than anybody else.
In the promos.
I am curious. I mean, obviously Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling blew it out of the park with their performances, but could you guys think of anybody else that could have played these roles? Like, is there anybody else that you would have envisioned in these roles besides these two people? I tried to think about it and I couldn't really come up with a great alternative off the top of my head.
You know, I don't have any off the top of my head. I would say, I think there are a lot of people that could have played Ken well. Not as good as Ryan Gosling.
Right.
But, like, I think there are a lot of Kens in the world. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? A lot of, like, blonde men. I mean, even, like, a Chris Hemsworth, you know, who, like, played in Ghostbusters, like, comedy and, like, kind of a doofus really well. I could see him doing this. Barbie, I think, is much harder. And there are, of course, beautiful blonde women in the entertainment business, but Margot Robbie looks like Barbie. And she is also, like I said, I think one of the best actresses of our generation. And so that is the harder role, I think, to find a replacement for.
I think so, too. I agree with that. I think the look of Ken could be replicated. I don't know if you could get the emotional core and performance of Ryan Gosling's character here from someone else. You could get some of the comedy, but I don't think you could get a lot of, like, what he does with the, again, we're not going to get into spoilers in this section, but with the emotional depth of that character and what kind of that character has to do throughout the movie, I cannot picture anybody else other than Ryan Gosling doing it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I also want to bring up another performance, which is America Ferrera.
Mm. Yes.
Yep.
I have been a lifelong America Ferrera fan, especially her work on the comedy Superstore.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Such an underrated show.
Have we talked
show.
About Superstore before?
I think so.
I feel like we have, yeah.
Yeah. I love that show so much. And she brings so much depth to this movie. And of course, she's also like, she knows how to do comedy and be lighthearted. But she brings, yeah, this emotional center. And I'm so, so glad that she was in this film.
Agreed.
And that she gets like the big blockbuster moment.
Yeah. Yeah, a long time coming.
Big time.
Very much so.
Is there anything else we want to say before we move to spoilers? I know we're all anxious to get there.
I do want to, I know I've been praising it the entire time. I do have some negatives and some questions about the movie. I think mostly most of them will go in spoilers, but I'll say up front. I think the big one for me is Greta Gerwig loves to do a kind of almost on the nose monologues. Which I think have worked well in all of her movies. But it is kind of like, to me, it feels like her thing. And in this movie, I think it still worked well. It didn't work as well as I thought it was going to. And it kind of, in hindsight, I'm curious to revisit the movie and see if it's going to maintain or if I just get caught up in kind of the emotional experience of the movie. But it felt like some of the monologues in this movie were a little too long and a little too on the nose. In a way that didn't necessarily fully work for me.
Yeah, that makes sense, Lucas. I agree. I also have some qualms with the movie, and specifically related to some of the plot points towards the end. I think
the whole ending is on my list to talk about.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that. I will say I think that comedies in general sometimes struggle with their trailers and how much they put in the trailers versus how much is in the movie. And I think part of me was just a little bit disappointed that so many of like the big comedic moments I feel like I'd seen before. And of course they were better seeing them in context, better seeing them in the movie as a whole. But I feel like I've seen so many trailers leading up to this and some clips of the movie leading up to this that I wish that some of the kind of comedic moments that were in the trailers would have been saved for the movie. So then they could have just popped out even more.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an ongoing battle that like we're all fighting with Hollywood.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, well, let's head into spoilers.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
Are you paying attention?
It's your last chance to walk away.
Let me tell you what's going to happen.
Now, cracking gas.
Spoilers!
Remember, you wanted this.
I really am curious to hear about some of your qualms. Maybe let's get the negative out first, and then we can talk more about like the things we loved.
Okay. My first negative is the whole Mattel storyline. To me, feels completely unnecessary, and as if you could almost cut it out of the movie and still have the movie as it is. Like, Will Ferrell's character, everything that's happening there, doesn't really matter in this movie at all. Like, at the end, he's kind of cut out of the last section of the movie. He just kind of comes out of the house at the end and is just like, well, I guess it all worked out kind of a situation. I have no idea why he's there. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. I think he's the least funny thing in this movie. And I kept waiting for them to get back to Barbie Land. So I'm glad they went to the real world to get America Ferrera and her daughter. But there was no reason for the Mattel stuff.
I think I disagree. I kind of liked the Mattel stuff because then you're reminded that Barbie is actually a doll, and like the scene where she is almost put in the box and the little twisty ties are going around her arms, like I thought that was so clever and just brought you back to the fact that she's a doll in this real world. And yeah, Will Ferrell is Will Ferrell, and I thought that it was like predictable, his performance, but I thought it was still fun. I think my bigger problem, kind of going off of what you said, Lucas, was the amount of time that they spent in the real world versus Barbie world. I feel like we just left Barbie Barbie world so fast. I wish that there had been more time kind of building up the kind of routineness of what happens every day in Barbie world. And I feel like we just jumped so fast to the real world. I could have just lived in Barbie land for so much longer.
Yeah. I was worried that the whole movie, after they left Barbie land, that the whole rest of the movie was going to take place in the real world. And I was going to be extremely disappointed.
I really kind of expected that. The trailers that I was seeing, I thought, okay, we'll start in Barbie land, we'll go to the real world, and then the majority of the movie will be Barbie in the real world. And when we went back to Barbie land, I was pleasantly surprised. I was like, oh, wow, we get to go back to Barbie land. Like, it was a positive for me. As far as, like, the Mattel Corporation stuff, I'm kind of, like, take it or leave it on the Will Ferrells of it all. Like, they didn't bother me, but I wouldn't say, like, they were my favorite parts of the movie. However, what I did love was the chase sequence that was included in that whole sequence.
That was
And the music. I forget what song it was that was
Charlie XCX.
Oh, yeah, it was the Charlie XCX song. And she did kind of a sampling of a bunch of artist songs. I think it was, like, a Robin song. And the Hey Mickey song in it.
Totally.
Yeah, that was so great.
That's my favorite song on the Barbie soundtrack, which I have spent some time with. and that whole sequence, I love the physical comedy of it. I love Barbie being chased. I love the way that the businessmen, like, kind of did this, like, dancer-like slow Tom Cruise run. I loved the scene where, or the shot where Barbie and Will Ferrell, like, spot each other and don't know what to do and just kind of run past each other. A lot of the physical comedy in that scene worked for me so well. So I wouldn't want to lose that.
I think in general it felt like a musical. And in general, all the musical aspects of it, and musical meaning like the musical play / movie situation as opposed to just the music. Right. All of those aspects I think felt very fun and exciting about this.
Yeah. And of course it did provide us with like the amazing first scene with Ruth Handler, the creator of Barbie, that I really enjoyed.
I do think also Greta Gerwig including the Mattel group in it, especially the fact that she made like the entire boardroom male, it just kind of continued to force the feminist side of this film like down your throat. Like it was just constantly kind of a reminder in every direction that of her message of trying to talk about the patriarchy. And I mean, I think in general, as far as feminist films go, it kind of stayed very surface level and very like feminism 101. It didn't really go further than that. It was kind of like stereotypical feminism or even white feminism that you would think of. But I do think that having the Mattel group be in there was very intentional. And I think overall it added to the movie, but it wasn't super necessary to the plot overall. I think it just kind of enhanced it more.
Sure. What about other qualms that y'all had?
Do we want to talk about the ending now?
Yes. Oh my gosh, the ending.
Yeah, let's go there.
I mostly have a lot of questions about the ending.
So many questions. So many questions. And I think that, like, okay, so basically the ending was Barbie decides to go live in this human world because she wants to experience the full realm of human emotion. And I just felt like if you're going to do that in a movie when you're trying to fit so much in, like, do it more. Like, I don't know. Just she made that decision and then we got the final scene at the end. But I had questions like, okay, what happens to Barbie land without stereotypical Barbie? Like, I want to see more of that. And if you're going to have this Mattel group in it, like, is the only thing you're going to do make a new Barbie that's ordinary Barbie? Or are you going to try to, like, change the makeup of the boardroom? Like, I just felt like it kind of made a decision but didn't kind of fully flesh it all out.
Yeah, I think it left a lot of those things unanswered. I also feel like the idea of Barbie is in her place of comfort in Barbie land, and then things start to change and she doesn't want them to change, and so she wants to keep Barbie land the way it is and she wants to stay the way she is, and she goes through a change throughout the movie to make her want to become human. That makes sense. I don't think we actually got all of the pieces to make her, to show how she wanted to become human or why she wanted to become human throughout the movie. And so the, at the end, the decision itself to me felt surprising and like it didn't necessarily fit with what we'd seen before.
Huh. I didn't feel that way. I loved the ending. I want to first address like some of y'all's things about, you know, like what happens with Mattel and, you know, what happens with Barbie Land without stereotypical Barbie. I think one thing that I like about this movie is that Greta Gerwig, from my interpretation, I will say, she is not saying Barbie Land was perfect. You know, Barbie Land is the ideal we should be working towards, right? She's saying like, yeah, they don't have it right either. You know, like the real world is messed up. Barbie Land is messed up. And we're making small steps towards a better version of both worlds.
I can see that.
The end of the movie, like things aren't, not everything's like perfect and solved, you know, like.
Right.
It's very much like, here are the small steps that both worlds are making. We're going to get an ordinary Barbie, but we're not going to get a female CEO, right? We're going to, you know, in Barbie Land, the Kens are going to get like one small judge and not, you know, full equal representation, right?
Yeah.
That progress is, you know, it's a very like realistic look at what progress looks like. And I like that she doesn't tie everything up in a nice, tidy bow at the end, that in a way that I think another version of the Barbie movie very well could have.
I guess that's just, I probably have that feeling because that's what I was expecting, you know? Yeah. Like, I totally get what you're saying. That makes a lot of sense now hearing it that way. Yeah, but I think I expected it to be tied up neater. But maybe, yeah, you're right. That probably wasn't the point.
Yeah. I similarly went into this kind of expecting what I was mentioning earlier, where like Barbie Land is perfect. Like I want to be in Barbie Land. And I loved that she shows the, that a pure matriarchy has its flaws too. You know what I mean? That it's not this, you know, that it's presented as a utopia, but it ultimately isn't a utopia. It was much more complicated than I expected it to be going in.
Do you feel like the path for redemption for the Kens was clear?
Elaborate on that.
Yeah, so they did a January 6th, basically, and what we got was them coming to the realization that they have no purpose, they have no, which is, I mean, similar to, I think, the experience that Barbie was feeling, of, you know, like, who am I? To me, that felt surprising for the Kens, but also I don't feel like we really understood that up until they, like, they said it, but I didn't get that that was their issue. To me, it felt like their issue was a power issue as opposed to an identity issue. But I get that, like, power and identity are combined in a way. I just don't feel like that was explored at all through the movie.
You know, one thing I liked is it seemed like that was definitely, like, Ryan Gosling's Ken's issue,
yeah, that's true.
Was very clearly his. There was a moment at the end where, what is his name? I've never known how to pronounce it. Nikuti Gatwa from Sex Education?
Great question.
Yeah.
I don't know who's either.
Where his Ken was like, I just want to be friends with my friend Barbie. And his Barbie and that Barbie and Ken kind of reunited. And what I liked about it was like that distinction that like not all the Kens are having this exact same journey, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
His Ken is not having the same Ken journey as Ryan Gosling's Ken. And so...
And not all the Barbies are having the same journey as stereotypical Barbie is.
Right. And so, yeah, to me it wasn't like that they all did... They didn't all like embrace patriarchy... for the reasons that Ryan Gosling Ken did.
Also,
I think it was just like what they were all doing.
Yeah.
On the Nikuti Gatwa, however you say his name. I'll have to look that up after this. I loved that in that final scene where he's like, I just want to be friends with my Barbie. I'm pretty sure that the Barbie was Emma Mackey. Am I right?
Yes.
Yes. That was adorable. That they were paired together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So lovely. Yeah. So that's how I felt about all the endings. But I definitely understand y'all's criticisms. Like, I think any criticisms I've heard of this movie make a lot of sense to me, even though I don't feel them.
I think overall the movie just tried to like combine so many themes into one. And in general, I think it did work. But at the end, some of it just got a little bit muddled to me.
Yeah.
Sure. I do want to talk about, you mentioned the monologues also, Lucas. One thing I did think when I was watching it was especially the America Ferrera's first monologue about like how hard it is to be a woman. I remember hearing that and in my head thinking like, okay, like you said earlier, Alyssa, this is like feminism 101, you know, we've heard versions of this monologue in other movies before, like the Cool Girl monologue and Gone Girl. I'm sure there are plenty of others that I can't think of right now. I've heard a lot of these points made before. Like, this isn't super original thinking. And yet, I couldn't stop crying during it. And
it's so, a great moment.
It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, even though I've heard all this before, this isn't new, it still, like, is hitting home. These might not be new thoughts for me, but for someone who hasn't spent time thinking about feminism, who's just coming to the Barbie movie for, like, a 16-year-old girl or a 21-year-old woman, you know, who's thinking about some of this stuff for the first time, like, this is their intro, and that is okay. And so, yeah, I understand the criticisms of that type of monologue, but I also can't deny, like, what it made me feel.
Yeah.
I also loved that moment. It reminded me so much of, actually, the speeches that were done in Little Women. And I was like, oh, Greta's writing this. Like, it came from
it
her,
felt
and
very
I
Greta.
Totally
yeah.
recognized it. Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, that one I absolutely loved. I think, like, once, by the time we got to the very end where the creator of Barbie, I forget her name, Ruth is talking so much about what Barbie means and all of those things. By that time, I was like, this is like our third or fourth monologue in this movie, and it is long.
Well,
it is good, but it is long.
That monologue has what I think is the best line in the movie. The line that made me cry instantly, and the line that when I talked to my mom, it was the first thing she brought up, which is, "We mothers stand still so our daughters can look back to see how far they have come."
Whoa.
Which is, yeah, it was the line of the movie for sure.
Yeah.
I thought at first you were going to say the one where it's humans only have one ending. Ideas live forever.
Oh, yeah.
Also,
I mean,
good.
That
also
one is
good.
Amazing too.
Also good.
Yes. So many themes.
I also didn't come into Barbie expecting this to be so much about motherhood and daughterhood.
Mm. Right.
And then
yeah.
we have this whole America Ferrera storyline
yeah.
that made me so emotional.
At the point where they are in the car with Alan leaving Barbie Land, and they're stopped and they have this moment together, America Ferrera and her daughter. That was when I was like, oh, this movie is for me, when I did not expect this movie to be for me.
Yeah.
I am neither a mother or a daughter, but at that moment I was just like, oh, you're really doing this.
Is that the moment where they start singing the song together?
Like, they start singing the song and then Alan pops up, but they have a moment where they realize they have to turn around and go back. Mm-hmm. I forget specifically what they say to each other, but it's this moment where I think her daughter recognizes her mom as someone more than just her mom, as like a human being and a person who was a girl. And that I was just like, all right, you got me.
I love that Lady Bird looks at a tense mother-daughter relationship from the point of view of the teenager.
Yeah.
And that this looks at it from the point of the view of the mother. That we get to see, like, what is it like to be the mother of a daughter that is, like, angry and thinks you're dumb and lame. And
that is a brat, would we say?
Yeah, a little bit.
You were waiting for that one.
I was.
But, I mean, she's a teen. Like,
I mostly said that because her whole group of friends were the brats, like the dolls. Brats,
oh yeah,
got it.
Oh,
got it.
I now get your reference.
Yes, yeah.
Great. When you saw the early scenes in the movie where Barbie's trying to find whoever's playing with her, in those moments, did you kind of anticipate that the movie would be more about the mom than the daughter? Because I feel like it's something that I saw, like, as soon as I saw two people playing with the dolls, that I expected it to be the mom.
I mean, I knew America Ferrera was in this movie, and when they, like, weren't showing us what the mom looked like, I was like, well, I mean,
I was afraid that was going to be, like, the third act reveal, that we were going to have to wait the whole movie for them to figure out. I was like, oh, no, this is going to... I'm glad they figured it out, like, immediately.
Yeah. They're also, in the marketing, there was one of the scenes that I had, like, watched before seeing the movie was when America Ferrera and Barbie, their eyes meet at like after the chase sequence, mm-hmm. you know, and it's such this loaded moment. And, you know, everyone on the internet first reaction was like, ooh, kind of gay. Like yeah. they look like they're into each other. And so the thought going in was either they are love interest or she was America Ferrera's Barbie. And, you know, that's what it turned yep. into. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
Well, are there any other like major critiques we want to get out of our way before we start gushing?
Let's gush.
I think that's all my critiques. Okay. I'm ready to gush.
Okay. I want to talk about how I loved how this was a reverse Wizard of Oz. I love that we started in this candy colored land and then moved into like bleak realism. All of the color choices of that, like the, my favorite was when Barbie showed up to the high school, how every single teenager is wearing navy, black, or gray. Mm-hmm. Just such a perfect, like, representation of, one, what it is to be a teen, but then also, like, what the real world is like compared to Barbie Land. I love the Wizard of Oz references in this movie with the pink brick road. There's a ton of cinematic references in the film, but that was my favorite one.
Mm-hmm. They also, I saw, like, a video of them making the set. There's actually Wizard of Oz posters in the movie and yeah. a yellow brick road and it was the Oz green city in the background. Yeah, that's everywhere. Yeah.
And then I also would love for us to talk about, I'm going to get serious for a little bit and then we can go back to like talking about some of the fun stuff. But the sequence when Barbie is first in the real world and she's like being ogled and realizes that this is like a male dominated society. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect to be as emotional during that scene as I was. And I will, like I said, share a serious story very briefly. A lot of this movie is about like moving from childhood to adulthood and how like jarring and painful that is. Mm-hmm. And specifically childhood to womanhood, right? And I remember the first time someone told me that they had been raped. And like before that, hearing that, someone I knew telling me that, rape was like a concept that I was aware of, but it wasn't like a real thing. And then the first time someone like shared that with me, it became like a very real thing that like violence against women like became something real that happens to people I know. And it was jarring and emotional and scary. And this scene of Barbie entering the real world really encapsulated like what that is like, how like it's so confusing and scary. And I didn't expect to be brought back to that moment in the Barbie movie. And I'm really impressed that Greta Gerwig was able to like recreate that sensation with such a quick, with such a quick scene.
Mm-hmm. And I think she did it in a way that was like, I was afraid of the two extremes as it was happening. I was like, oh no, this is happening. But I yeah. was, my fear was that it would either go too far into comedy as in making almost light of it. Right. Which I mean, I don't expect from Greta Gerwig, but like that's an option in a comedy movie like this, or yeah. going the other direction and going very dark and getting really, you know, serious about it in yeah. a way that doesn't fit with the rest of the movie. And I think she walked the line perfectly to lean on those themes, understand the situation, and also lean into the comedy aspect of Barbie in the real world.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt very real, that scene. Like, and it was the first mm-hmm. thing that Barbie was experiencing in the real world. And it was also interesting just watching how Ken was experiencing that world and the juxtaposition yep. of the two and how they quickly, their experiences diverged so fast.
Immediately.
And yeah. that Ken doesn't pick up on any of Barbie's like unease, you know yeah. what I mean? That he's yeah. like so engrossed with how well he's being treated that he has like no perception of like what Barbie is feeling and how like real that is, you know.
It was yep. very artfully done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I will say immediately after those rollerblading scenes, making this a little bit lighter for a second, one thing that will live rent-free in my head that was also in the trailers is Ken's smile when he's holding up his little name card in the police station. That just image, that image of him is just burned into my mind forever.
Yeah, absolutely. I also love that, like, after the rollerblading sequence, we still have more of, like, Barbie experiencing the real world, right? Mm-hmm. And how that, the scene of her with the old woman on the bench, was, gosh, so beautiful to me. And how, again, all of this, like, for if you're using this as, like, an allegory for, like, entering adulthood, right? How there is, like, the fear of, you know, the rollerblading sequence, but there's also, like, the acknowledgement of aging and the acknowledgement of, like, complicated feelings all around you that Barbie is, like, you know, like being thrown into for the first time ever. And yeah, I just can't believe she was able to encapsulate that, that growing up is so many different things all at once. And she was able to do it in, like, you know, two or three very short scenes.
Yeah, as Barbie would say, it was achy but good.
Oh. You could almost say that, like, somehow heartbreak feels good in a place like this. Which is immediately what I thought when she said that crying felt achy but good. Yeah. I loved that so much.
I loved Ken's little montage of figuring out what the real world is like.
Yes.
Absolutely thought it was hilarious, but also how much he leaned into it. Like, I didn't realize early on that he was really interested in the horses, the horse aspect of it, until we got back to Barbie Land. But I thought that was so funny, just the introduction of that, and just all the conversations that he had there. I loved at the end where he realizes, where he says, like, once I realized it actually wasn't all about horses, I kind of wasn't that interested.
Yeah.
Ken's a horse boy.
Without any context, it's so funny, like, the idea of that Ken's just obsessed with horses.
Yeah.
But I saw an interview with Greta Gerwig where she explained that she had this idea because she said, I like the idea of Ken not understanding the real world, entering it, and that, like, you see statues of men on horses, and then you see men riding horses, and it's not really clear who's in charge when you see a man riding a horse. Like, is the horse in charge? Is the man in charge? Yeah.
He says horses are just men extenders. So funny.
Yeah, I loved her explanation of that. That if, like, an alien showed up and, like, just saw, like, they might also wonder, like, wait, who's in charge? The horses or the human? Yeah, you had the great line in that sequence where Ken says to a man, he's like, y'all aren't doing patriarchy right. He's like, oh, no, we're doing it well. We're just just better at hiding it.
Yeah.
Very funny.
Yeah. Oh, incredible.
How did you guys feel when we went back to Barbie Land and everything that happened there when the Barbies have to kind of dismantle what's going on? And then, of course, that big fight sequence. I'd love to hear your thoughts about kind of everything that happened in that second half.
First, I would just say it was such a surprise, like, to see that that Barbie world, Barbie Land was taken over by patriarchy. Mm-hmm. I had no expectation of that going into this movie.
Yeah.
And so, one, it felt great to be surprised, I think, like, was my first reaction. Two, I think it was a very funny take on what patriarchy could look like, right? Mm-hmm. There were some things that were, like, expected, like, you know, like, the women are cheerleaders, like, or the French maid outfit, like, those things, like, oh, yeah, I get that would be, like, your first thought. But there were other little details that I just thought were so funny, primarily that all of the Barbie dream houses had, like, six flat screen TVs in each one. That was my favorite little take on, like, what a patriarchy in Barbie Land could look like.
I also loved how messy everything was.
Yeah.
like not they're trying to get the women to clean up. It's mostly just like, that's not something that matters anymore.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I also didn't expect Ken to become, like, so villainous in the movie.
I was shocked by that because that's not in any of the marketing material, but the fact that, like, is he the antagonist of this movie made me really realize that, like, I don't know what's going to happen next, which is very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved how surprising it was. Yeah. Alyssa, what did you think of it?
I mean, I loved being back in Barbie Land and seeing all of that. I felt really bad for Barbie, like seeing her dream house.
So sad.
I was rooting for Barbie the whole time, but then also you totally understand how Ken would feel too, like kind of always being pushed down and not appreciated and just trying to be there for Barbie. I also just thought Ryan Gosling and all of those scenes just took it away. I mean, he just ran with it and I just couldn't take my eyes off of him. Like when he's talking to Barbie and he comes out of his, like the double doors that swing like in a Western movie, and then he props his arm up and he's still conscious of Barbie being there and wanting to impress her, but now he's owning this whole world. I mean, all of it was just so funny.
I remember being really like genuinely sad. I was excited for America Ferrera's daughter to see Barbie Land, and then being genuinely sad that she didn't get to, like, that when she arrived, all of the, like, the female president, yeah, and all of that it was all taken away. Like,
yeah.
I, like, as Barbie was, like, really upset at, like, what had happened, I too was also very upset.
So upset.
I also want to bring up one of, I think, the hardest things that made me laugh in the movie was the Depression Barbie commercial that we get in the middle of the movie.
You know, I knew you were going to talk about this because I've listened to this podcast enough that I know you're a Pride and Prejudice fan.
Yeah.
And I knew you were going to latch on to that moment.
I'm a huge Pride and Prejudice fan. For me personally, it would have been the 2005 Pride
me
and
too.
Prejudice that I was
me too.
Watching. But the BBC series is great too. And the whole commercial though was delightful. I loved when they make a joke about what you eat with depression, which I think you could be dangerous, you know, like what kind of joke you make. But they did it so perfectly by saying you eat a giant bag of Starburst all day, yeah, and then your jaw hurts. It was the perfect joke.
There are so many memes coming out about that scene. Just all of millennial women just feeling very seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very accused.
Yeah.
Okay. This also brings me to the other thing that made me laugh so much, another standout performance, which is Kate McKinnon. I always love Kate McKinnon, but what a perfect choice for Weird Barbie. I really reveled in her scenes.
It is very Kate McKinnon.
Very Kate McKinnon, yeah. Like,
In a way that I enjoyed, but I don't think, I think also because she is so involved in the trailers also, I think I knew what I was expecting, mm-hmm, seeing her as Weird Barbie. But I don't know who else you could ever cast as a Weird Barbie.
Yeah.
So.
I love the idea of her character, the fact that she's a Barbie that got played with too hard, and this is what happens. I mean, it's just hysterical.
Yeah. I especially liked the Matrix scene where she presents the heel and the Birkenstock to her. I think that was just a funny take to see, like, what happens when the person's like, okay, you know, definitely I want to forget. I don't want to know the truth. and being like, oh, actually,
this isn't an actual choice.
Right. Yeah, I also did, on like more of a, you know, symbolic level, I love the idea of this like set aside section of Barbie Land that had the discontinued Barbies.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was no mistake that the queer Barbies were, or the Barbies that were maybe implied to be queer were like a part of that discontinued land.
Yeah.
That the entire concept of Barbie and Ken is heteronormative. And that, again, I think it's like Greta Gerwig saying, like, Barbie Land is not the ideal. You know what I mean? Even in Barbie Land, we are like casting aside the character, the people or the characters that are, you know, weird, marginalized, like don't fit into like a Barbie Ken dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a very nice touch. And I don't think, even though I don't think Weird Barbie was specifically implied to be queer, I don't think it's any mistake that she cast Kate McKinnon to be that character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, can we talk about the best song nominee of 2023? It's
going to
be.
Definitely. I hope you're referring to the I Am Ken.
Of course.
Sequence.
Yeah. Yes.
The concern is that the studio will push for the Billie Eilish song.
Which I have nothing against that song, but why would you either. Not? This is, is this going to be like the Encanto situation where they don't put in, you don't talk about Bruno?
I know, right?
You have to push the meme song. You have to.
Or else it doesn't stand a chance.
Yeah.
Right.
I will say, I want us to come back to the Ken song, but the Billie Eilish song is the one that I keep singing to myself. At least like the opening line is so perfect. The I used to float, now I just fall down.
Oh, yeah.
I used to know, but I'm not sure now. I have just been singing those two lines over and over to myself. So I do think that that song is very beautiful. I'm not pro or for or against Billie Eilish in general, but I loved the song.
It's a good song.
Yeah.
I hate that it's a rule that only one song per movie can get nominated.
Yeah.
So they have to put all their weight behind one song, which
right.
is a...
You know, I don't think that that's a rule.
What?
Because...
No, it is a
rule. I think La La Land had two songs nominated. Am I wrong?
Okay, so the answer is a single film can submit up to five songs, but only two of those can be nominated.
Okay.
So...
Gotcha.
Most movies don't because they're afraid to split their votes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's ultimately, I think, the biggest thing is that, you don't want to split your vote. And so you pick one to promote heavily.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear what other nominations you think this film will get, if that's on your list.
It better get
to
director.
About.
It better get production design. It better get costumes.
Yeah.
I want Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
And Ryan Gosling to get nominated.
Mm-hmm.
Comedies are hard in those categories.
Yeah, they're so hard.
Right.
But I feel like with this being the phenomenon that it is, I mean, this made $150 million, $120 million on opening weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, this is, I feel like this is the movie of the summer. So hopefully.
It'll at least get those Golden Globe categories, but we want the Oscar.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. It'll definitely get the Golden Globe categories.
Yeah. I think I've heard the most buzz about Ryan Gosling getting nominated. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like if I had to make a bet on one of them, that would be it. Of course, production design, I think, is also like probably a slam dunk.
Yeah.
I personally would really love a director or a screenplay nom.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that's what I would be pulling for. But I don't, those are harder cases to win.
We'll cross our fingers.
Yep.
Yeah. But let's definitely talk more about the I'm Ken sequence.
Yes.
What was the song's name? Is that right? I'm Ken?
I'm Just Ken.
I'm Just Ken. I mean, it was incredible.
It's just, just incredible. I mean, everything about it. Like, his outfit while he's doing it, the grease montage sort of thing, everybody dancing, and then it ends in this huge fight between all the Kens. I mean, what more could you want?
It's true. I think it also helped that how unexpected it was. Like, I didn't expect a song to break out. A song fight, I guess.
A beach off, you mean?
A beach off. Yeah, absolutely. A beach off. I didn't expect a beach off. Which is shocking, because that's all they talked about in the first half of the movie. but no, I loved the song. The song is very funny. And I think Ryan Gosling's performance of it is incredible. Just his exaggerated flexing and moving outside of the dancing, which is also incredible.
Yeah.
It in general just feels like a 1950s Hollywood like musical song, and it was incredible. I absolutely loved it.
I was full on enjoying it, and then when we got to the part where we moved to the soundstage where they're all in black, I was losing my mind.
Yeah.
I loved it so much when it transitioned into that.
Yeah.
In general, I love how much this, I don't know that I would call Barbie a musical, but I loved how much it embraced the elements of musicals. And particularly the visual aspect of that scene and all of the dancing and the colors of the soundstage and how big it was, how many Kens there were felt incredible. It just felt old Hollywood in a way that was lovely. One tidbit I want to bring up that I think makes the whole movie so special is I heard a Greta Gerwig interview where she said for all the background Kens and Barbies that are not like main cast members, instead of casting like background actors or models, she cast all dancers. One, because there are dance numbers, but also because, as she described, dancers when they're standing still, when they're not, you know, doing dance numbers, they hold themselves with purpose and intentionality in a way that, like, regular people don't. There's a poise and, like, a posture to them that feels like they are dolls, you know? And that things like that, there's a million details like that that make this movie so special. There's a million production design choices, a million world-building choices that Greta Gerwig made that really, really make this movie, like, just out of this world for me.
Mm-hmm. I think she said in an interview she wanted it to be authentically artificial. And I was like, what could you say beyond that about it? I mean, it was both and. Like, it was the two of the things combined.
Yeah, and I loved, like, specifically the world-building stuff, like, the little choices she made about what would a doll land be like. You know, there is a different version of this that could have been way too doll-like, right? Like, everyone moves really stiffly, or, you know, everything has, like, way too much of a plastic sheen to it. But instead, she chose things like, my favorite of all the details is we see early on in the opening sequence that, like, water doesn't exist, you know, like, there's no water coming from her shower. But then it's, like, really hit home when Barbie walks across her swimming pool.
Yeah.
That was my favorite little moment, is that, like, the swimming pool at the Barbie dream house is, like, a solid blue, shimmery plastic that it's not, which is what it's like in a real Barbie dream house.
Yeah. It's all so exactly good. Like, I mean, even when they mention, like, the car not having an engine or anything like that, like, it is, these are the toys.
And there was, like, certain, those, like, world building rules that some of them, like, are visually explained to us, like the water thing. Some are verbally explained to us via the narrator of Helen Mirren. Mm-hmm. Like, when she says that, you know, Barbies don't walk down the stairs. They just, you just grab them and put them where they want to go. And that's why the Barbies are floating, you know? I think there was just enough of that in the movie.
Yeah.
That, like, as you're watching it, you just understand, like, not every little thing has to make sense, every stylistic choice, because these are dolls, and you're just bought into the world.
Yeah. It felt very nostalgic as somebody who did grow up with Barbies, like, seeing the brush that was there, and seeing, like you said, the pool and the dream house. And personally, being in the medical field, I was just cackling to myself when all the moments related to, like, medicine came up, like the little clinic that opened up the specific way that it did, the x-ray that had, like, a heart on it that was, like, drawn on, and then and then when Ken goes to the real world and he tries to go do an appendectomy, I mean, I lost my mind. It was just so funny.
Oh, I loved how, like, he asked for a scalpel and a clicky pen.
And
how,
a clicky pen.
They're equal, like, importance to him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That little medical vehicle that showed up on the beach in Barbie Land was, it just felt like a toy so much.
Yeah, it would just open up just like that. It was so good.
Yeah, and I know there's too many amazing, like, performers in this movie to mention them all, but Michael Cera as Alan, you know, like, a small role that was just, like, delivered perfectly. Issa Rae as the president. Emma Mackey, so I think. Emma Mackey, like, she kind of did something different than the other Barbies with her voice. It felt very old Hollywood, a lot of her vocal choices. Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't seen her in anything before. I watched Death on the Nile. I have not seen Sex Education. I've heard it's amazing. I've just never started.
Yeah, she was on Death in the Nile also. Yeah,
she was Death in the Nile, and that's that. You're right. I loved her in that. So she's fantastic, and I can't wait to see more.
So something really interesting about her casting choice. People her first season of Sex Education, she had blonde hair, and she's now a brunette. But when she had blonde hair, she and Margot Robbie look so much alike. And both Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig have admitted that when they cast her for this movie, they expected to do something that played into the fact that she and Margot Robbie look alike. I always mm-hmm. expected that she would be playing Skipper, Barbie's little sister, you know?
Like, oh, that would have been
why
good.
Would you cast a Margot Robbie lookalike and not do something yeah. with that? They then said in an interview that when they started getting ready to film, they're like, when Emma Mackey has this brown hair, she actually doesn't look that much like Margot Robbie, so we didn't go in that direction. If I had one critique about the film, it would be like, put a damn blonde wig on her then. Like,
yeah,
what are you I agree. Doing here? You're wasting.
It would have been very fun.
How often
I'm Googling
do you
pictures of her, and she does very much look like it.
They get confused for each other, yeah.
Yeah. How often do you have celebrities who are not related to each other look like they could be relatives, you know?
Yeah.
I think when it was you a miss. Actually come across that, you have to take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And so I do shame them for not doing something with that.
Agreed.
The other miss that I would have loved to see, just because they were both in Greta Gerwig's previous two films that she directed, was that they tried to get Saoirse Ronan and Timothée Chalamet to make a cameo, but they were both unavailable because of scheduling conflicts. And I just wish that they had been able to do it. It would have been so good.
I know. Yeah, that's heartbreaking. Yeah.
Kind of like how Rian Johnson has Joseph Gordon-Levitt in every single one of his movies, even if it's just like a tiny little cameo. That's what I want Saoirse Ronan to be for.
Yes.
Regret it, girl.
Next time.
Yeah. What can you do? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking through the cast list to see if there are any others that, like, Hari Neff in this movie I thought was also really funny. I watched the first two episodes of The Idol, and Hari Neff is in that show and I think is a bright spot in that show. In this movie, she played Dr. Barbie, but also DJ Barbie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just really appreciated seeing her here.
She was also someone who I hadn't seen before that afterwards I was like, I need to Google who she is.
Yeah. Fun little tip. She is a great follow on Letterboxd. If you're looking for new people to follow. Yeah.
In general, I think just a great set of Barbies. Like great casting
great
all
set,
the way around.
Yeah.
And cast.
Totally.
But like just perfect casting there.
They tried to get a few other people. They tried to get Gal Gadot, but she was also unavailable. I think they tried to get Jonathan Groff in it, and they also tried to get Dan Levy, and I would have loved to see him in it.
That would be very fun.
Dan Levy would have been great. I honestly think Scott Evans is in this movie, mm-hmm. and I could see Dan Levy in that role.
For sure. I think Jonathan Groff is my, like, if you're just looking at his face, he is a perfect Ken, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want him, obviously, for Ryan Gosling's part. But
like, you know what?
As a Ken in that world, that's
I
perfect.
Think I heard, maybe I could be wrong, but my memory is that she originally wanted Jonathan Groff to play Alan.
Yeah, that's who she was.
Oh, mm-hmm. interesting.
Which I think Michael Cera is a perfect Alan.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want to say that I plan on watching this movie like a million more times before the end of the year. I want to take other people to see it. I want to buy it as soon as it comes out. This movie didn't disappoint me in any way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm very excited to see it for a second time.
Yeah, I will definitely also be doing the same. And Sandra, I might do what you did, and I might do Oppenheimer next, and then I'll do Barbie afterwards. A nice little dessert.
The thing is that, like, I couldn't put off seeing Barbie. Like, I couldn't see Oppenheimer first because I couldn't delay seeing Barbie in any way.
Fair enough.
But then I also didn't want to, like, end on Oppenheimer, you know?
Yeah.
That's such a sour note to end on. Not because it's bad, but just because of the subject matter. And so, yeah, I'm glad that I sandwiched them.
I like it.
Overall, great movie. Highly recommend. And just looking forward to everything else that Greta Gerwig has to offer. And hopefully what is to become a very long career.
Well, do you guys know what's up next for her?
No.
No.
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. Yep. That'll be great.
She is signed to do two adaptations of two of the books. We're not sure which. I'm assuming one will be The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But who knows? You never know.
Yeah.
Again,
and I'm pumped.
Childhood into adulthood.
Yep. Yep.
That's true.
Although, you know, I'm sure she'll have takes on womanhood and femininity and that's those stories. But, like, that's not what those movies are about or those stories are inherently about.
Not yet.
Exactly. So it'll be interesting if that's her first kind of, you know, veer off that path.
She'll put her mark on it still somehow on those themes. Yeah. Sure.
I heard she signed up to do Oppenheimer 2. That's what I want to see. Them swap. Now Nolan has to do Barbie 2.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Actually, I'm not interested in his take on Barbie at all.
No, neither am I. Well, I'm so glad that we got to have this conversation. Let's tell people where they can find us online. Alyssa, do you have anything you want to promote or any, you know, social media platforms you want to promote?
Well, I'm pretty sure my Instagram is private, but if you follow me, I'll probably let it happen. You can find me at AlyssaMay_Weaver on Instagram.
Lovely. Lucas, yep. Where can we find you online?
You can find me on Letterboxd and at Lucas and Stuff. You can also now find me on Blue Sky at Lucas and Stuff.
Lovely. Well, you can find me on all social media platforms at Sandra Amstutz. My last name is spelled AMSTUTZ. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye, Barbie.
Bye, Barbie.
Bye, Barbie.
Thank you. Goodbye now. Goodbye.
Go away. I'll see you soon, okay?
That's it. Go home.
Yep.
Moving along, Padre.
Goodbye, old friend.
That's it. That's our show for tonight, people.